the doctor crippled the charge on his services, that he does have to pay, because the Ramban says that the doctor is selling his knowledge, his expertise, and you can't put a market price on the expertise. But we pointed out that the Ramban, after all, was a doctor, who, so therefore he may have been slightly... But we saw the later tshuva of the Radvaz, who was not a doctor, and was talking about a situation where there was the only doctor in town, and he sort of overruled the Ramban and said, certainly, if this is the only doctor available, he can't charge more than the market price, and even if he's not the only doctor available, he should not charge more than the market price. And as far as your question was concerned, there the Radvaz says that if he's the only doctor in town, even if you paid, you can get the money back. If he's not the only doctor in town, his personal opinion is, even in that case, to go against the Ramban. But if you've already paid, he doesn't feel that he can overrule Ramban's decision and force you to pay back. So the Radvaz was of the opinion that we saw last week, that the money can be recovered even after payment has been made. The Maharami Rutenberg in this tshuva that we're about to read doesn't allow the money to be recovered after it's paid. But here's an example. I want to read two tshuvas of the Maharami Rutenberg. The first one is one of out-and-out blackmail. Okay? Daf Lamed, the tshuva Lamed, the next to the last page of my handout. Yes, you have it. The next to the last page. Adoni Sha'al. This is a case of out-and-out blackmail. Adoni Sha'al al Reuven shenafla lo yevama. Man's brother died, and his wife now needs either yibum or chalitza. V'haya savor shehayta yalo yoter mikdei ketuva. He thought that she was she was in a good financial position, that is, that she had more assets than the ketubah that she was entitled to. V'lo ratza lachalotz ad shehayta notenet lo mamon. So he would refuse to perform chalitza until she would pay him off.
Why mention the ketubah?
Well, we'll see, because of what's going to happen later in the case. Okay, but the point is, he was blackmailing this woman. He was refusing to give her a chalitza, an unfortunately and not unknown situation in modern times. He was saying that he would only give her the chalitza if she would pay him off. His sister. Upashu beinehem shehayta la liten lo esrim zkukim chiluf v'haya lo lachalotz la. The agreement was, they finally decided on a fee. She would pay him 20 gulders, and he would perform the chalitza. Umachlu ze la ze kol tviyut shehaya beinehem b'kinyan gamur. And then they said that after this payment of 20 gulders, all other debts and obligations will be cancelled, and everything will be even. That's why Mr. Fried will see that the ketubah is relevant.
The contract, that's
right. So they agreed that she was going to pay him 20 gulders, and then all other debts, all of the claims that she may have against the estate will be cancelled. And
estate?
Vice versa.
Who got the estate?
The brother.
The brother got the estate.
Right. When they came to court to perform the chalitza, az natana la shalish esrim zekukim b'ma'amad shlashtam, she gave the 20 gulder in escrow to a third party. Va'amar ha'yavam la shalish, and the yavam said to the third party, kishala chalotzla az titainlik otam esrim zekukim. After I perform the chalitza, you then give me the 20 gulders that are in your possession. Ve'amar lo ha'shalish, hey. And the man who was the third party agreed. What do you call the person that's holding the escrow?
Escrow.
I don't know. What
escrow.
The escrow agent. Here it's simpler in Hebrew, just the shalish, the third party. Uliachar ha-chalitza, after he performed the chalitza, hotzia shtar ketubata, then she pulled out her ketubah and said that she now is demanding the collection of the ketubah, give me back the 20 gulden. So he thought the deal was that he would be free and clear and collect the 20 gulder on top of not having to pay anything to her from the estate. He would get the entire brother's estate plus 20 gulder that were in her possession. And now she says, no, these 20 gulder come back to me because I have a claim against the estate. Okay. And the Beit Din instructed the escrow agent to return the 20 gulders to her in payment for her ketubah, ki nishba'a shelo haya kedei ketuvata, that because she took a note saying that her ketubah had not been paid yet, and that therefore she was entitled to this. Ad kan l'shamcha. That was the question that comes to the Maharam Rutenberg. Remember, he was a court of appeals. This was a decision that was taken by the lower court.
You have appealed by Tushra?
That's a complicated question. But in fact, if you remember, we discussed that question about 8 or 9 years ago, and I had to write a long tshuva on that to the labor court in Israel, if you remember. We had to decide that whole issue. And it's a complicated question. But the fact of the matter was that the Maharam Rutenberg served as a court of appeals to all of the... So where were we? Yeah. The fact of the matter was that the Marappenburg served as a Supreme Court of Appeals for all of European Jewry, certainly all of Western European Jewry. So this case came to him. Okay. So he says, "Lo bi arta li kol hatzorech. You have not given me enough details in this case. But ani afarish, but I will explain what the rulings are. But I will supply the necessary details." Yeah. Im hi amra la shalish b'mamad shlashtan. If the woman instructed the shalish, tein lan otam eskim zkukim achar sheyachlotz li. If she instructed the escrow agent to give the 20 gulders to the brother, az vaday yesh lo la shalit nedam lo sharek na'am b'mamad shlashtan miyad nedam lo achar chalitza. So this is an answer to your question. He's saying that if in fact the escrow agent acted as the representative of the brother, and by receiving the money upon the instructions of the widow, has received them on behalf of the brother, then the money is in the brother's possession, and she cannot make a claim that she was doing this only to trick the brother into performing the chalitza, but had no intention of paying.
What? If that's the case,
what
would the purpose would be? Would there be in there be a shlish?
No. If she he's saying this, that if she had empowered the shalish to act as the brother's agent, then she has no escape in this. But if there's a situation,
if she's willing to accept the shalish as the brother's agent, why would she even bother using the intermediary in the first place?
Because she wasn't sure that he would actually perform the chalitza.
And he wouldn't go through it.
He might not go through it. He may take the money and run.
Then the shalish isn't the brother's agent.
Yeah, so that's what he's saying, is that if she deliberately says to give it to him and didn't change her mind before the act of the chalitza and the money is already in his possession, then she can't retract. Yeah. I'm not saying that this is a good ruling, because I much prefer the ruling that we saw last week of the Radvaz, that this money is refundable even after it comes into the possession of the extortion. Okay? But in any event, that's the Maharam Rutenberg's position here. He's saying that if the situation was, if she has deliberately and explicitly given instructions to pay under those circumstances, then the money is coming into his possession and he doesn't have the, and she can't make a claim against it. But if all it is that the third party is holding the money in escrow without a very specific instruction on her part to deliver, so that we cannot interpret the escrow agent as the representative of the shalish, but simply as the representative of the court, who will then decide whether the shalish has, whether the brother has fulfilled his obligation and transfer the money to him. Then the court can decide that the counterclaim that she has against them can.
So
the question is whether the escrow agent is a representative of the court or is a representative of the brother and has received the money on his behalf.
So what she's got to say to the escrow agent is, don't deliver this to the brother-in-law until after he gives me halitha.
Exactly.
She says for you to turn.
That's right. But if she has the, but if she formulates it positively instead of negatively, okay. I think it's a bad ruling, but that's at least what the ruling is. Okay. Yes.
The question is, why does this ruling apply to the conditions of a labor contract?
No,
it does
because we're talking now about a condition of where the workers are blackmailing the boss by threatening to quit in the middle, where the boss will suffer a huge loss. So in that situation, the ruling that we've had in the Gemara is that the boss can agree to any of the workers' terms in the middle in order to make sure that the work is done, and then he's not obligated to fulfill the terms.
But what I'm saying is that this widow has substantially less protection under, it seems to me, than...
Well, the question then becomes whether, for example, the same ruling would apply to the boss. Right. If he's already paid the money, mm-hmm. can he demand it back? If we take the ruling of the Maharam Rutenberg seriously, then you can refuse to pay the cab driver when he overcharges you by 3 amount. But mm-hmm. once you've paid him, you can't then go to the police and ask for your money back. By the tshuva that we saw last week of the Radvaz, mm-hmm. you're able to. Okay. Now, the only thing that's left is still to get one other example of the Ramban's position that we saw last time, what constitutes an outrageous price. So here's another amusing tshuva of the Maharami Rutenberg. Let's go to the next page. Reuven kibel al kaval al eshet shemo. The Reuven makes a complaint against Shimon's wife. Va'amar. This is his complaint. Al manahayit, you are a widow. And you asked me to fix you up with Shimon, right? Yeah. And you promised me a half gulder in payment for my arranging this matter, a shadchan gelt, and my arranging with Shimon. And therefore I went and talked to Shimon and persuaded him, ad shana'ot l'cha v'nasa'ot. Until I talked him into marrying you. V'tnili chatzi hazakuk. Give me my money. He wants his half a gulder's payment for helping to arrange this woman's marriage. V'hiko feret hakol. And she denies the whole thing. V'omeret adorabo. Just opposite. Pumfaker. Bekoshi gadol bikshuni krovai shenit ratziti. It was my family that had to twist my arm until I finally agreed to marry him. And it wasn't your persuading him that was the issue here, but it was my having to be persuaded in order to agree to this wedding. V'lo atein l'cha klum. I don't want to pay you any. Uvo'u ladin. And they came to court. V'danu hadayanim l'potra v'lo shvuah. And they wanted to set her free. So again, this is a case of appeal, right? The lower court decided in the favor of the defendant in this case, in the favor of the woman, not having to pay. V'rayatam mehagozel batra, and they tried to prove this from tol dinar v'havireini, ein lo ela scharo, that when a person the taxi cab driver demands a gouging fee, he is only entitled to the normal fee. The Gemara in Bava Basra was the case of the guy crossing the river, had a boat, the man was escaping from jail.
What's the
comparison?
The desperate.
He said that, we'll see in a minute. V'af al gav z'ktani seif en otein lo scharo mishalem ak minu lo b'kitzayel b'ach ha-chudam ha-chinami me'achar sh'shemon ha-yada etzla ba'ir. Shimon was after all, Reuven was after all living in the same town. He had no expenses here. All they had to do was engage Reuven in a certain amount of conversation, Shimon in a certain amount of conversation. V'lo tarach elo b'dvarim, maschar ro'i li'tet al zeh. there should be no fee. I mean, his services are not worth half a gulden. That's what the lower court said.
It's not that they're believing her that this whole thing never happened.
No, they said the man, what he's entitled to is the amount, he is entitled to a little payment by the hour for the amount of effort that he put in, but he's not entitled to this exorbitant fee of half a gulden for arranging a matter. וגם שאלו לו רב, זל וישיב לו דמי לתום הנוסעתי בשכר המעבורת שאין אדם עשוי לתת דינו, משום הכי אין בכך כלום, ביומה משעת היבח. And they asked the rav, this came before an intermediate court, before it reached the Maharam in Wittenberg, and the intermediate court overturned the decision of the lower court by saying there's no comparison. In the case of the taxi, there is a fixed meter price, or in the case of the man with a boat crossing the river, there is a fixed price. However, in the case of something like a shatchan, there is no obvious fixed price. Uma'asim b'kol yom b'sir surim. It's all the time the case that when people arrange deals, people who arrange a deal frequently get a large commission for one telephone call, right? Are you going to say that the amount of effort that went into that one telephone call isn't deserving of the fee? Whenever we're talking about arranging a deal, the agent, the broker's fee, can be very large in comparison to the actual effort that was put in.
Paying for his
well, no, you're not paying for the chachma, you're paying for the outcome. The market price, he's saying the effort, it's the same telephone call to make a $10 million deal, and it's the same telephone call to make a $1,000 deal.
Right. A finder's fee is often proportional to the size of the outcome, not to the amount of work.
That's what he's saying. So that therefore, you can't talk about gouging in the case of a broker. You can talk about, at least you can't fix the fee by the amount of effort involved. Okay? He says, "Laharbot b'schar shadchani." Similarly, a shadchan sometimes can demand a heavy fee, and it's normal practice that a shadchan collects a heavy fee, and it's not necessarily proportional to the amount of effort or time or physical labor expended in doing it. V'chein kol sarsurit, all forms of commissions. Lefichi bata meka depends upon the value of the deal. Vaharehu kechol poel sheschar tiochol notel ve'ein kan din asmachta, and this is a legitimate obligation to pay a shadchan's fee. Ki kones charo b'fulato dum yadaharei at mekudeshet li'amanat shadaber l'shilton v'hadavar yadua she'ein b'dipuro shaveh puta en lo shi'payes ha'shilton al yadel. Payment is for what he achieves by talking to the to the governor, not by the fact that his effort in engaging the governor in conversation is worse. So the principle that's involved here is that it's hard to fix what an appropriate fee is for an agent who's involved in a mercantile deal, and therefore similarly, since the fees of shadchanim vary, maybe according to the size of the estates of the various parties who are engaged in the marriage, to say that she can claim that he put in no effort in speaking to Shimon and persuading him to marry her is no reason not to pay.
No, the successful completion of a deal and paying for all the times when he wasn't successful.
One way of interpreting it.
Yeah.
But, I mean, the fact of the matter is that some people, by making a billion-dollar deal by one or two telephone calls, collect an enormous salary, even though the amount of effort that wasn't. So. Okay, all right. The next topic that I want to discuss is the issue of how to assess the obligation of the workers of a kablan when it's not a davar avod, but it will take me more than 10 minutes to even get into the subject, so we'll postpone that for 2 weeks.
Is there any discussion, I don't think we talked about it last time in the other class, but...